other nonprofit organizations. Information on how to give and how your donations will help our community is on the web at www.ccfd.uiuc.edu.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be spending some time talking about winter weather and getting ready for winter. Here this fall, in this part of the country, we have been enjoying some temperatures that were running a little bit warmer than average, and so it was probably for a lot of people a little shock to the system this morning when it was cold and the wind was blowing and we had wind chills in the teens, I believe, and we actually even had a little snow. And what that tells you is that winter is not that far away. And in fact, this is the time set aside here in the state of Illinois and I believe also in Indiana. They call it something different, but essentially the idea is the same. It is to get people to think about the fact that winter is coming and that you need to be prepared. And in fact, officials of the Weather Service and other people who are in the weather business like to try to remind us all that winter weather can be hazardous. I think we're used to the idea that severe thunderstorms and tornadoes can be a problem, but severe winter weather can also be a problem, and it's a good thing to just keep that in mind and be ready to go. So we'll talk a little bit about that this morning, preparing for winter, and if people have questions about winter weather, winter storms, how they work, and how forecasters track them. We have a fellow here in the studio who has the answers. Ed Kieser, our chief meteorologist, is here with us this morning. He's been good enough to come and sit and answer questions, and does from time to time, because we know people always have questions about the weather and how it works. And this is a chance for you to ask questions that would require a slightly more longer and more involved answer. I do want to say, please, this is not talk to Ed, okay? If we can't do the forecast for travel, that's something that we do on Fridays. And to do that, Ed needs to be in the weather office where he has all that information. So he's here in the studio with me this morning. This is a different sort of thing. Somebody will do that on Friday, just like always. But here, it's a different project, and if you have questions about weather and how it works, you give us a call, and I know Ed will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, and I'll start off by mentioning Talk to Ed, of course. We'll have that on Friday, 7:50 a.m. and 12:40 p.m. Central Time. We also have special editions next week. Can you believe next week it's Thanksgiving week already? That just blows my mind that we're already there. I think because it was mild for so long, all of a sudden we're right up to Thanksgiving a week from tomorrow. So we'll have special editions of Talk to Ed next week on Tuesday at 12:40 p.m. Central Time and on Wednesday morning at 7:50 a.m. Central Time. So you'll have your chance to ask questions on the weather forecast Friday, and then again Tuesday during the noon hour and Wednesday morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, just to we got some callers getting lined up here, but I think it's probably worth mentioning again that winter storms can be hazardous. Now, we know that if you take a look at fatalities, that floods and lightning and tornadoes, those things kill more people than winter storms.
Well, on average, probably every year it varies a little bit, but on average, it's said that about 80 people a year are killed by winter storms, and that's in the same ballpark in the U.S. as tornadoes, and floods do kill more people than that, and lightning a little more, but it's still a hazard up on par with the tornadoes, let's say, as far as fatalities.
Right. And again, it's also my understanding that the majority of the people who are killed as a result of winter storms, they are people who are stuck in vehicles. Is that right?
About 70% of all people that are killed or die during winter storms are in vehicles, a lot of that from car accidents and vehicle accidents. I shouldn't just limit it to cars, but about 70% of all people that are killed in winter storms are in the result of vehicle accidents. About 25% are caught out in the storm, and statistically, the majority of fatalities are to males over the age of 40. That's not to say that others can't I have problems too, but statistically there are more males over the age of 40 that die in winter storms.
Okay. I guess if there is good news about winter storms, it seems that one of the things is that we seem to get more notice. That there's a difference between the kind of volatility of the weather that we see in the, say, in the spring, particularly into the summer, where you get severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Although, as you have taught us, you could have one of those any time, any month of the year. It seems that though they pop up faster and we get less warning, but in the winter, it seems that, and it has something to do with the way winter weather works, that often we get more notice. We might have a couple of days of notice that we're expecting significant winter weather here. And I guess that's because pretty much you can look out to the west and you can see it coming.
Well, you can see a storm system developing. There are tricks to winter forecasting, and a lot of times you'll hear meteorologists talk about it depends on the track of the storm or the intensity of the storm. We're able to forecast quite well the big storms in their general track, but sometimes there are some nuances that can make a big difference between a couple of inches of snow and a half foot or a foot of snow, and the difference between all snow and freezing rain and sleet. And often those are the tricky parameters in forecasting winter weather. But the big picture, forecasting a winter storm and the roads are going to become messy, usually there is, as you mentioned, good lead time on that.
Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, it seems that the trend has been for winter to be relatively dry. And I don't think that, I'm sure you probably know about the precip totals for the last couple of winters and how they've been running. Is that, it seems to me that we might get one or two significant snowfalls, but that generally we recently have not been getting a lot of snow, at least not here in the central part of the state.
We have not gotten a lot of snow on most winters over the last couple of decades. It's been a bit of a snow drought around here with a few exceptions. Now, last winter, believe it or not, it's hard to remember, but if you turn the clock back to January, we actually had a very wet month. We had over 6 inches of liquid equivalent precipitation, and most of that came as liquid. We had very little snow. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of rain in January, and parts of the listening area had some serious problems with flooding. I was on a farm near Watseka about a month ago, and they're right on the Iroquois River, and they were showing the whole area that was flooded in January there. This family was stuck in their house for a while, because it became an island.
Really?
Where their house was.
Yeah.
So we did. It wasn't necessarily a dry winter, but in terms of snowfall, it was a pretty light winter.
Knowing how you feel about long term forecasting, are there predictions for the winter? Do you even want to talk about that?
There are predictions, but they're changing all the time, and basically for this area. And specifically, there's no real tilt in the odds toward warm or cold or snowy or non-snowy. So I really think we just ought to be ready for just about anything. We've even seen this month where we've gone from warm to cold, and that was anticipated. But going out more than about a month, I just don't really believe any of the forecasts or outlooks at all. I've learned to not trust them. And whether you're talking about winter storms or if you're talking about the summer growing season and the weather affecting crops, people before the start of the season will make bold predictions. And as it turns out, the most significant thing that happens in any of those seasons is never anticipated ahead of time. And you could go into a summer and say it's going to be dry, and it's dry most of the summer, but there might be a collection of thunderstorms on a few days that bring the needed rain to make the crops, or in the wintertime, it could be a mild winter, but you could have a two-week period where it's just brutal.
Yeah.
So every year is different, and I'm not trying to hedge. I'm just using scientific reasoning to say you can't really make an accurate forecast for the entire winter, so I'm not going to.
All right, so you have to be ready for anything.
That's right.
All right. Well, we have several people here with calls. We'll get to right to them, starting with Urbana and line one. Hello.
This question is left over from the summer when we were having daytime thunderstorms and nighttime thunderstorms, and I was wondering about what's the difference in the way they form, since I thought sun was important to the formation of cumulus clouds and all that.
Okay, well, thunderstorms do come from cumulonimbus clouds, which are clouds that grow to great heights vertically. They're what we call clouds with vertical development, and in order for a thunderstorm to develop, the atmosphere has to be unstable. And what that means is the temperature has to be much warmer at the ground or on an elevated surface, which I could talk about, above the ground a little bit, and then much colder aloft. So there are what's important is the temperature change with height has to drop off rather dramatically in order to make the atmosphere what we call unstable so that these clouds will grow vertically. Solar heating the ground, of course, making the ground warmer makes the temperature difference from the ground and the air aloft, which is colder, that makes that difference greater. So solar heating is one major contributor to making the atmosphere unstable and leading to thunderstorm development, and that's why we see more thunderstorms in the afternoon hours into the early evening hours than at any other time in the 24-hour cycle. However, there are other factors that can lead to thunderstorm development, including colder air coming in aloft. If the temperature stays the same or actually even decreases a little bit at the ground, but if a much colder air comes in aloft, that can make the atmosphere unstable and lead to thunderstorm development. Also, sometimes we get what's called a low-level jet at night, which brings in warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico about a mile above our heads. So it's actually warmer a mile above our heads than it is at the ground, and that is an elevated surface from which unstable air and convection can originate from. So thunderstorms form generally in the same way. It's just what causes and that's an unstable atmosphere, but what causes the atmosphere to become unstable can be different. And, of course, the night thunderstorms are not the result of the sun heating the ground.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to another Urbana person. This would be line number two. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if there was a difference in how the signal gets sent when there's a warning to the weather radios versus to the radio. Some people were saying that the tornadoes that recently occurred in southern Indiana, the weather radios did not go off, but sirens did, or something like that. Can you explain how that whole system is integrated, or if it's integrated?
Okay. I will do my best. I did hear the same thing you did about some weather radios not going off in southern Indiana, and I know that the National Weather Service is investigating that. It might be a case of some radios are just older and perhaps aren't equipped with the newest technology. It could be a case where some tone did not activate that should have out of the National Weather Service office. So I don't know the full extent of what caused the problem. This was a week and a half ago with the Evansville tornado at 2 in the morning. The National Weather Service operates a network of radio stations. It's called NOAA All Hazards Radio, or they keep changing the name. It's weather radio, but it's now All Hazards Weather Radio. In other words, terrorist attacks and chemical spills and other hazards will also be broadcast on the weather radio stations. And the National Weather Service has a rather dense network now of weather radio stations. I think there's about 95% coverage in Illinois, for example. And they operate at a frequency that's different from AM and FM. The station's frequencies range from 162.40 and 162.55 megahertz. Many weather radios that are sold nowadays have a feature which is it activates a siren or a tone or turns your radio on if the National Weather Service sends a special tone out. The EAS tones will activate the weather radios, or should at least, in the event of severe weather. There are more sophisticated weather radios have been out the last few years with what's called SAME technology, SAME, S-A-M-E, which is specific area message encoding. And those radios you can program to your specific county. If you were to get just a standard tone alert weather radio in Champaign County, it would go off for all warnings and watches in a 9-county area served by the local transmitter, which is here in Champaign. If you get a SAME radio, you can program it to just activate for warnings in Champaign County, which is probably a good idea if you're sleeping. You don't want the, if you're in Champaign-Urbana, you don't need to be alerted to a tornado warning in Coles County for Mattoon or Charleston, for example. Now, the sirens are completely different. Those are not activated automatically. They're activated by emergency managers in specific towns or counties. Not all towns and counties have sirens, and that's more of a human factor. They can go, they're activated when an emergency manager feels they should be activated. Sometimes there are tornado warnings in Champaign County, and the sirens in Champaign-Urbana don't go off, and that's because the tornado is going to threaten another part of the county. Sometimes the sirens will go off before a warning's issued if one of the severe weather spotters that they've deployed sees rotation in the cloud that looks like a forming tornado, or if they actually see a tornado. One thing that's very important for everybody to know is this, and emergency managers tell me this all the time, and on an interview I got to do on NPR a week ago, I mentioned this too. Outdoor warning sirens are designed to be heard outdoors. They are not designed to be heard inside. Now, of course, many of us can hear the siren inside, but if you're sound asleep and the siren is not right next to your house, you're likely not to hear it. So this comes down to a personal responsibility issue, and that's why I recommend a tone alert weather radio for people in this part of the country so that you can get the alert from the National Weather Service to wake you up in your house. And I've talked a long time here, but I hope that explains this a little better.
Yeah, it does. We had originally bought the less expensive weather radio several years ago, and it drove me batty with the number of times it was going off. So I went back and spent a little bit more money and got the ones that are programmable, and I programmed it to also pick up. You can program it to be more than one county.
Right.
I put in the ones to one or so to the west, figuring that the tornadoes tend to come from that direction.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, Piatt County probably, if you're in Champaign-Urbana, would be a decent one to give you a little bit of a heads up.
Even so, we get flood warnings and we get severe thunderstorm warnings, and it's not just it goes off more than I would like it to. But I'd rather have that than not be awake if something is happening. But thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the question, because I know a lot of people have that question. Perhaps down the road they'll even program, they'll make the radios even more sophisticated where you'd say, I only want tornado and severe thunderstorm warnings. Because some people don't live in as flood-prone areas as others. Obviously, if you're in a flood-prone area, you want those flood warnings. And yes, they will sound the alert for all of those tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, and floods. Some of the older radios that are less programmable will, they'll sometimes, I know some have told me they've been awakened by amber alerts, and I know that's something that was new where the National Weather Service is now required to send those out. So they're working to try to make it so they're not waking everybody up at night. And once in a while, a false tone will come through, and I know I've had the radio wake me up in the middle of the night before when there's no severe weather at all, but that's been a while.
Okay. Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580, our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser for WILL. We're talking about the weather. Specifically, we thought it would be a good idea to talk about winter weather. This is Winter Weather Preparedness Week here in the state of Illinois and similarly also in the state of Indiana. And it's that time when officials are just wanting to remind you that winter weather is coming, that it can pose hazards, and it's a good thing to be prepared. Particularly if there is some possibility that you might end up being stuck in your house, or that if you spend a lot of time traveling in vehicles, the chance that you might possibly be stuck outside in the weather as well. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. We have somebody here, again, someone local here in Champaign-Urbana, line number 3.
Hello.
My comment on driving to the West Coast. Some of the maps show roads that are closed in winter, and Denver's about 5,000. And within 180 miles, one reaches a pass at 10,000. It's very narrow. But it seems in Arizona, there's only 6,000 to 7,000 foot elevations and no narrow passes. And about that call about the Weather Service, there was a legal case. Someone in the fishing industry claimed they suffered damage because of a warning or something that wasn't delivered, and they found the Weather Service not legally responsible, so one has to read the fine print, etc.
Okay. I don't know if you want to comment on that, particularly though I'm sure though that, it, as the caller says, it's a good point. If you're going to be traveling in the wintertime, think about the route and think about the possibility that you might end up in some place where you're going to have problems, and certainly you would expect in the higher elevations, if anywhere, that's where it's going to happen.
Well, there are more problems in the mountain areas, and if you're traveling out on I-70 through Colorado or I-80 through Wyoming or I-90 through Montana, you're going to go over some high passes, and sometimes the roads are closed. Sometimes the weather is a lot different in the mountains than it is down in the valleys. And that, since we have a moment here, the one as far as traveling goes, I think since 70% of all that are killed in winter weather are in vehicles, it's probably good to talk a little bit about winter traveling. And the first thing I should say is common sense is an important factor, but some of us don't always have common sense. Even those that typically have common sense sometimes feel something they've got to get to is so important that they're going to throw common sense out the window and just travel anyway. So if you're going to travel anyway, obviously you've got to allow more time in winter travel. But the first thing you should do before you travel in winter is you should check the weather forecast for your entire route. And if you're going all the way to the West Coast, that could involve several days. I know the trickiest questions I get on Talk to Ed are questions where somebody will be traveling from here, driving out to, say, San Francisco over a 5 or 6 day period. And what's tricky about that is they're going from east to west, and most west weather systems are moving west to east. So it's looking at a lot of different factors on a lot of different days and trying to figure out how far you get each day and so on. But it's important to check the weather forecast ahead of time. It's also very important to, when traveling in the winter, any great distances or even maybe short distances, let somebody else know where you're traveling and what routes you're taking. So if you don't make your destination, they can maybe at least send help to come look for you. It's very important to do that. And a few other things you should do with your, if you're traveling, is your cell phone and charger are good. But keep in mind that cell phones don't always work out in the country. And if you have a blizzard going on, that's going to degrade the signal between cell towers. So it's good to have your cell phone, but I wouldn't depend on that. I think some people have become so dependent on new technology that when it works, it doesn't work. People just give up right away. And cell phones aren't going to always work. So you should still take the old supplies along, the blankets and extra clothing, a flashlight, a first aid kit, and, of course, any prescription medicine. And that's something we learned from the hurricanes, too. Some people, a couple days after Katrina hit, did not have their insulin or other medical supplies. And when you have a big storm coming, you should stock up a little bit or make sure at least you're not down to the end of your prescription. Because big storms come, aid can't always get to you. FEMA and emergency managers do say that you should have at least 72 hours of supplies for any emergency, and that includes water and medicine and anything else you may need, some food. Of course, traveling, you want to have a good snow brush and ice scraper and even a small shovel. I find when I take a small shovel in my trunk, that keeps the snow away. If I forget it, that's when it snows. So that's just the old Murphy's Law there. And some water and some high-calorie, non-perishable food is good to have, a tow rope and toolkit, a compass and road maps, of course, and basically, a lot of it is the old common sense. Another good thing too, I think I skipped here, booster cables, or so you can get a jump start if your car dies. And we find that in cold weather, that's when the batteries usually go. And a lot of people still like to carry around a sack of sand and kitty litter that you can add more weight to your car to get traction. And also you can pour it on some ice too to maybe get more traction if need be.
Yeah, and I think also one of the real basic standard pieces of advice that's given to people if you're traveling in a vehicle and you get stranded, stay in the vehicle. Don't get out and decide, well, I'm going to walk.
Especially in a blizzard,
because it's real easy to get lost, to lose your sense of direction, to know where you're going. And even if you do kind of know where you're going, if conditions are really hazardous, you know, that can be really dangerous. So the standard advice is to say no. Don't try to walk to the place you're going. Don't try to walk to shelter. Stay with the vehicle.
And of course, if you don't have to make a trip during icy and snowy weather, don't. You know, and even when you get a couple of inches of snow, especially the early season snow, I don't like to go out anyway. I can drive in it, but not everybody else can, and I'd rather just not meet people that way.
Yeah, there's a little learning curve there that goes on right there in the beginning.
I teach a class at Parkland College 2 days a week, and when the first snow comes, if it's on the day I teach, I take the bus. I leave the car here, and I take the bus, and I always see people coming out of there that are usually a little wilder than I am, and you see the fishtailing around the curves there and slamming on the brakes and cars not stopping, and I always think, yeah, I'm glad I'm on this bus.
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. Oaktown, Indiana is a caller on our toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to advocate, instead of cat litter, cat food for traction.
Seriously? Cat food instead of cat litter? You mean dry cat food?
Yeah. Cheaper the better. And the starlings will eat it if it's in your driveway. You don't have to worry about it.
Oh, okay.
And another thing I've discovered, if you park your car in your garage or whatever and it snows a whole lot and your car's going to bottom out, I just take my leaf blower and blow out a path with my leaf blower rather than shovel it and get a heart attack. And people laugh at me, but I'm still alive, too. You know? You might have to, if it's crusty or something, you might have to break it a little bit, but it's just something to think about.
Yeah, well, if it's a light, dry, powdery snow, I would expect that would probably work just fine.
Yeah, sounds easier to me than shoveling. Yeah.
And you can eat cat food. I don't know about cat litter if you get stuck in the snow.
Under ordinary circumstances, you might not want to, but if that's all you got, well, maybe that would be okay.
Thanks.
All right, thanks for the comments there.
Our number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We're talking about getting ready for winter weather. Our guest here is our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. You want to give us a call, you can do that. Just maybe we also ought to mention, and I raise the point because I know people always ask about that when we're talking about thunderstorms and tornadoes, about watches and warnings. I think people find this, as many times as we try to explain what is a watch and what is a warning, people find it confusing. And here in the wintertime, we're using the same words. There are winter storm watches and warnings. And I think sometimes people are confused about what exactly that means.
And advisories.
Yes.
Yes, yes. We have those too.
We got an extra one that we don't have the other times.
Well, in wintertime, the same as in summertime, warnings are the most urgent. And watches mean just watch out. An advisory is in between. And basically, we start with a watch. A watch generally means a winter storm is possible and you need to watch the weather. Usually, winter storm watches are issued a day or two in advance of a winter storm. And that means a storm is coming in that could produce a significant amount of snow or ice accumulation or a significant amount of blowing and drifting snow, even if not much new snow is expected. So when a winter storm watch is issued, that means nasty weather is likely on the way, and that's the time that you do make sure you have enough medicine and food and water and are prepared for a power outage if you're at home, or if you're planning to travel, you better check closely the forecast and get going ahead of the storm or plan to wait until after the storm. A warning means that a significant winter storm is imminent or already underway. Travel is not recommended unless it's an emergency. And we could get either a winter storm warning or a heavy snow warning or an ice storm warning or a blizzard warning. Those are the kinds of warnings we get in the wintertime. A lot of times we get the generic winter storm warning because in this part of the country we get a mixed bag of precipitation, ice and snow. But if it's going to be all snow and over 6 inches of snow, they'll issue a heavy snow warning. If it's going to be an ice storm for sure, then you'll get the ice storm warning. They're rare, but they do occur. And those kind of warnings mean it's just going to get nasty outside and travel is not recommended. Now, advisories are issued when the roads are going to get slippery or travel will become inconvenient but not impassable. So an advisory means winter weather will produce an inconvenience to travelers and extra precautions need to be taken to avoid accidents. So if we get a, say, 2 or 3 inch snowfall, there might be a snow advisory issued, but it's not enough to issue a heavy snow warning or winter storm warning. Mm-hmm. So when we get advisories, usually they pertain to travelers. When you get a winter storm warning, then that pertains to, I better think about things at home as well.
Yeah, and as we've said, what's fortunate at least about that kind of weather is generally we get good notice. I know they're bragging on themselves, but the folks at the Weather Service say that apparently since the late 90s, most of the winter weather storms here in central Illinois have had advance warning by the Weather Service, an average lead time of 15 hours. So that's pretty good. That'll give you a chance to make sure that you're ready and get done whatever you need to get done.
Of course, probably what frustrates people is sometimes the storm doesn't pan out and it's the old false alarm, and that does happen sometimes where a storm system will fizzle or change direction at the last minute, and usually that means that somebody's gotten the nasty weather and we've just missed it. And that happens every winter where there's a couple storms where the big snow's forecast and it then just misses one place and probably hits another. What I like to say, if you look at the U.S. as a whole and you're trying to track a storm several days out, 100 miles off is not that big for the whole country, but that could be the difference between very little snow or 6 or 12 inches of snow in your location. And, of course, if they forecast 6 inches and you get nothing, then that's a blown forecast.
Yeah, well, I don't know. As far as I'm forecast concerned, if they forecast 6 inches and we get nothing, it's okay.
Yeah, I said they, meaning since we were talking about the National Weather Service.
Right.
Of course, if I forecast 6 inches and there's nothing, that's also a blown forecast.
Well, and I know
I'm not
you
perfect.
I know you would be unhappy with yourself if you had done that. But still, I'd say if it was me, I'd say, well, that's okay. I'd rather not than have the 6 inches, you know. But yes, obviously, you're important. Trying to be accurate is important to you. Let's see. New Harmony, Indiana, we have a caller here, line number 4, who's getting back, I guess, to that issue of the weather alerts. Hello, go ahead.
Yes. The National Weather Service announced that they, through the TV stations, that there was a programming problem that caused some of the radios to be activated and others not. The programmable radios were activated during the Evansville tornado, but the non-programmable ones didn't get the alarm.
So the old-fashioned tone didn't work. They just sent out the more sophisticated tones or chirps, if you will. Okay.
Right.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Supposedly, they've corrected the problem, but it was unfortunate. Another problem happened during this the last don't know that it was really a problem, but during this second set of tornadoes that came through yesterday, that or the day before, whenever it was, that in Warrick County, the people that activate the
sirens,
they activated them when they weren't under an alert, because they took it on their own initiative that, well, it's hitting Vandenberg County. Well, it could come at us too. And later on, the National Weather Service did, you know, put them under alert. But people heard the sirens coming off. They could get in and get the news from, say, the TV stations, and then go out and tell people that, they just set it off on their own initiative there, and the Weather Service hasn't, you know, because of tornadoes, but even though we weren't under alert, and then people be outside and they actually get under alert, and they wouldn't believe it this time. Or, you know, it was changed, say, 30 minutes later because of changing conditions. And people could assume that, oh, our local people are just getting edgy. And it kind of seemed like a bad situation when it was announced, you know, they were going off for tornadoes, but the National Weather Service hadn't called it. So I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll comment. Well, first off, on the weather radios, the older weather radios activate, the older tone alert weather radios that just activate for any county within the listening area of the weather radio station are activated by a tone that goes off. The newer, more sophisticated radios that you can program by county are activated with information that goes through some of those EAS chirps. So it sounds to me like that tone didn't go off on Sunday morning a week ago around Evansville, so some of the older radios didn't go off, and that's very unfortunate, especially if anybody in that mobile home park had one of those radios. But nothing's perfect. As far as the sirens going off, again, yes, local officials activate the sirens. They do not need to have permission from the National Weather Service. If they see something that they feel is threatening their county or area, they will sound the sirens. And that's an individual community or county function, depending on how the local government's set up with the sirens. And I know around here, if Champaign County is feeling that they want to activate the sirens because they see rotation in a cloud or a tornado, they will, of course, be in contact with the National Weather Service, and usually a warning will come out almost immediately based on that. But sometimes the local officials here even will sound the sirens when the Weather Service doesn't have the warning, and vice versa. So there is a little bit of a difference in jurisdiction. They are supposed to and do their best to coordinate, but really when you get down to it, the sirens are all a local function, and the National Weather Service, of course, is just that. There are 9 different offices that serve the Illinois-Indiana area, and for Evansville, the information comes out of Paducah, and same with Warrick County right next to Vandenberg County.
Yeah. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus with our meteorologist, Ed Kieser. We're talking about weather, and we've got a number of different questions. We started out thinking maybe we talk about winter weather, since that is coming. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, climatological winter begins on December 1st. In advance of the that's in advance of the
astronomical.
Astronomical, yeah. The other way that people sort of think about the seasons. So as far as weather forecasters are concerned, they divide the year into these four packages of 3 months. So climatological winter is December, January, and February, and that makes sense because January is on average the coldest month, so it's the middle month of climatological winter. All the stuff I learned from you over the years. I have been paying attention. We all pay attention. What other kinds of things can you say about, obviously you can't say what kind of winter it is, but if you look at averages, what sort of things can you say typical about at least what winters have been like over the past few years?
Well, around here, the average snowfall for the entire winter season is 26 inches or so. Of course, we're very far from that most years. Many years, we've had a lot less than that in the last couple of decades. But every once in a while, you get a big winter. I think the record snowfall for Champaign-Urbana for a season is in the upper 50s for inches. You go back to some of those late 70s winters, and there were even a couple in the early 80s where we did get a lot of snowfall. Interestingly, our biggest snowfall ever, and ever means with records going back to the beginning of the 19th or beginning of the 20th century, I think, for snowfall, is just 15 inches. And that occurred in early 1999, that storm that came right after New Year's Day. So that's our biggest snowfall. Yeah. To me, that's
really 15 inches. That's it.
You would think there would have been a bigger one out there at some point, but we do indeed have our coldest weather in January, and typically the weather lags about a month behind the shortest day and longest day. So our shortest day of the year is December 21st. So it's about a month after that when we hit bottom with temperature on average, and conversely, in the summertime, June 21st is the day of the summer solstice, and it's around the 21st of July or so, or a couple days just before that, where we typically have our warmest weather on average. So the weather lags a little bit, and that's why we do have the climatological seasons set up as they are, because it does match the weather pretty well, with December, January, and February being our coldest months. The only other thing I'll say, based at least on what I've looked at the last 20 years or so, it seems that every year there's one month that's the big month as far as snowfall and the bitter cold. And some years it's early. Back in 1991, probably our most brutal weather came in November. We had several mornings where the temperature got down to around 8 to 10 degrees in early November. We thought, oh, we're going into a bad winter. And that was about it. Some years it's December. Some years it holds off till March. Every year is different. All right. But that's one thing I've noticed. It seems that and the reason for that is we only get a couple of big snows a year. Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey says on average in Champaign-Urbana, the number of days with 4 inches or more of snow is 1.4 days. The average number of days with 6 inches or more of snow is a half a day. So basically once every other year.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We don't get a lot of snow around here.
Well, let's talk with somebody here in Vermilion County. Toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I've been wanting to ask for 2 or 3 months now. When a hurricane occurs and it's picking up speed and water and so on in the Gulf, as it comes ashore, is there a significant component of salt water in the rain that ensues?
I don't think so. There might be a little more salinity in the water that comes, but basically what salt does not evaporate. The hurricane, well, to go through the whole process, the hurricane uses water vapor or water that's in the gas form in the air, and that water does evaporate off the ocean, and then it condenses again into the liquid water up in the clouds. So,
I thought actually that there was some physical picking up of the salt water as it whirled around.
There might be some near the ground, but the salt, there's salt particles that do get higher in the sky. The rain around here is made with a lot of dust particles, but we don't refer to a lot of, we don't refer to it as dust falling. So I've never really studied it. The salinity of the rainwater around the oceans is probably a bit higher, but it's still not really extremely salty.
Well, I suppose if it were enough to affect crops, we'd hear about it. So.
And they do grow crops right down in the Gulf Coast states. Yeah. In fact, a lot of soybeans are grown in the Mississippi Delta. And, of course, there's other crops that grow down there that we don't grow here because it's warmer.
That significant amount of rain, why it would be flooded out anyway, regardless of whether there was salt to it. But I was just curious, and thank you.
That's something I'll have to look up to. I'm doing a talk on hurricanes at the Starkle Planetarium on Friday, December 2nd at 7 p.m. I'll give a plug there. The first Friday of the month during the fall and spring semesters, they have a World of Science lecture there, and I'm doing the December lecture. Uh-huh. And it's going to be on hurricanes. Really, there's enough material to work with from just the last 2 years. Yeah. And very, very interesting times in the tropical world as far as hurricanes and tropical storms. Although I see Tropical Depression 27 never made it to name status. The winds got up to 35, but didn't cross that 39 barrier to become Tropical Storm Gamma. And,
I thought they actually had Gamma.
No.
So it actually didn't.
See, everybody is so, when I say everybody, the news media out there is just so hyped on setting all the records. They had Gamma name before Gamma ever even was born. So no Gamma yet.
All right, but we have until about another 2 weeks, right?
Officially, of season.
So it's not impossible that we could have Gamma.
No, it's not impossible. But Tropical Depression number 27 never reached tropical storm status, so it never got the name. So we're still at 23 named storms on the season, with Beta being the last storm.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I thought I might ask you about. This is something I know that we talked about a couple of years ago when they changed the way that wind chill was calculated. And I think the idea was that the wind chills that we were reporting under the old formula were too low. And so they changed the formula around. Are people generally now happy about wind chill? Do they think that the numbers that we give are actually a realistic indicator of just how hazardous the cold and wind is?
Well, I could directly answer you. I don't think anybody's ever happy about wind chill. But having said that, nobody's ever completely happy with these derived terms or parameters. This is not something that you directly measure. I think the numbers are more accurate, but I know there's still people out there trying to come up with yet a better formula. What some want to do is take into account solar radiation, cloud cover, and humidity and other factors to come up with a feels-like number, and some private companies have done that, but it's very difficult to come up with a perfect parameter, and in reality, each person has their own wind chill. Everybody has a different metabolism. Everybody has a different surface area of skin, and as a result, every person has their own wind chill. When you get right down to it, you don't know what your wind chill table is, but having said that, the numbers are more accurate than the original scale, which was developed during World War II in Antarctica and using more primitive methods.
Yeah. We'll try real quick, get one more call here in Champaign. Cell phone, hello.
Hi, a quick question for somebody who's not educated in any meteorological or agricultural way. Could you give a lay explanation of what a degree day is?
Oh, one of our most frequently asked questions.
Yes, I'll give you the quick explanation on it. And by the way, what's useful about that is just adding up the totals through the season and comparing the totals to last year and average, and it's used basically for determining whether you're using more or less heat in the winter or power for cooling in the summer. And basically, you start out with a base of 65 degrees, and you take the high and low temperature for the day and find the average. So if the high today is 40 and the low 20, the mean is 30, then you take 65 minus 30 and you come up with 35, you'd have 35 heating degree days for that day. And any number with the mean under 65, you add a heating degree day. Anything over 65, it's a cooling degree day. So you just add them up through the heating season and cooling season. And we give those numbers only during the 9:35 broadcast, where we give a few more numbers than at other times of the day.
So it's an indication of the trend, and is it warmer or cooler than the
last year and average?
Last year and average.
And right now, our heating degree day total is behind last year by over 100, and behind the average by I think close to 200, because we had a mild fall so far. We're now just starting to add to the heating degree day total, and when all is said and done, on average you get about 6,000 heating degree days through the period of July 1st through June 30th, which is the heating degree day season.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure.
Our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Support for the broadcast today comes from Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m., Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at corkscrew.com. The program here, Focus, also made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates. This year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. That's it for us, but we want you to stay tuned. There's much more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine, and the host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, our guest will be sociologist Louise Brown. She's a senior lecturer in sociology at the University of Birmingham in England. Her latest book is The Dancing Girls of Lahore, Selling Love and Saving Dreams in Pakistan's Ancient Pleasure District. That's what we'll talk with her about this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look at prices on the Chicago Board of Trade. December wheat trading at 307 unchanged. March 322 and a half down 3/4. December corn 193 and 3/4 down 2. March 207 and a quarter down 2 3/4. May corn 215 and a half down 2 1/2. December 242 down 2 1/4. January soybeans 582 and a half down 9 3/4. March 590 and a quarter down 9. May 596 and a half down 8 3/4. November 608 down 8 1/2. December soybean meal 175.30 down 4.90. December oil 22.31 down 3. November feeder cattle 116.32 and a half down a nickel. December live cattle 91.40 down 30. December lean hog 63.10 down 75. February pork bellies 88.25 down 50. December crude 57.95 up 97. The CRB index 314.90.